Okay, so we are holding on Samach Beis Amud Aleph. The line begins Lahach there, about the middle of the Amud. Okay. We started discussing yesterday, we had a Machloikas, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. You took Ribbis. Is it something that Beis Din can take away from you? Or is it something that just you're, at that point, you're Chayev Vedin Shemayim, and that's that. Tosfos actually discusses over here a little bit when that according to Rabbi Yochanan, if he says Einu Yotzi B'Dayanim, means even if you want to be Yotzi De Shemayim, there's no obligation to return it to be Yotzi De Shemayim, according to him. Whereas according to Rabbi Elazar, it can be taken away by Beis Din in certain cases, and as we'll see later on in the Gemara, and even in the cases where not, you can undo the Aveda that you did by returning it. Okay. So the Gemara says, Maisi, I have a contradiction to Rabbi Yochanan. You're telling me that Ribbis is not something that can be returned, that returning it does not undo the Aveda you did. A Braisa says, Hagazlonim in the middle of Samach Beis Amud Aleph, Hagazlonim Malvi Ribbis, Gazlonim and people who lend their ribis, Afakisha Gavu Machzirin, even though they collected, they have to return. Now, before we get to the point of the question, we gotta ask, Gazlonim Mai, Afakisha Gavu Ika. What do you mean by Gazlonim? What are you using the expression once they collected it? Collected it as if it's something like they collected legitimately. E gozel gozel. If they stole, then they stole. You can't call it that they were goiver, as if like they went and collected it as something that was owing to them.
Right.
The Ilai Gozo Gazlonim Karis Lahu, and if they didn't actually steal yet, how can you call them Gazlonim? Ela Ema, obviously what the Braisa must mean is Gazlonim Mai Minu Malvi Ribbis, namely, the Braisa must be saying Gazlonim, namely, what is the definition of Gazlonim for this purpose, namely, Malvi Ribbis, Alpha Pisha Gova Machzirin, even though they collected their Ribbis, they're still obligated to return it. So according to Rabbi Elazar, that makes sense. According to Rabbi Yochanan, how do you understand that? So there you go.
That just works for Ribbis.
No, but that's where we're talking about Ribbis. Rabbi Yochanan is the one who says that Ribbis, it's in a Yotze b'Dayanim, that Dayanim cannot force you to return it. And like Tosfos says, even you yourself, if you want to be Yotze Yedeshmaim, you want to do Tshuva, then you don't return it. There's no particular obligation to return it. How would he understand this?
Yeah.
The answer is Tanoi. Mm-hmm. The answer is we would have to say it's actually Machlokes Tanoi. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Now, we talked yesterday that all the different parties who are involved in a loan that involves Ribbis are over on one or another Isser. We're going to learn towards the end of the Perek, because at the very end of the Perek, we're going to learn that of the three different places where the Torah describes it, the Malva, what is it? The Malva is over on the Mitzvahs involved from all three places, the Loiva is over on two of them, the Orev and the Edim and whatever are over on one of them, whatever. We'll see the details at the end of the Perek. But we have a Braisa. Rav Nechemya, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Potur and Asamalva v'sa Orev. They say that the Malva himself and the Orev are Potur, meaning Rashi says they're Potur from the Loisa as well as from Malkus. Rav Neshi yesh behen kumase, because there is an essay involved. It becomes a lav anitikal essay. It's a lav. They committed a lav by taking ribbit. So in the case of the Orev,
What's the essay?
The essay is to return it. That's the chayach
chichimah. So they say returning it is.
Wait. Let's wait. That's what we have to. So therefore, it becomes a lava nitikal essay. There was a lava to take ribbis, but it's canceled out by the essay to return it. By the way, what we mean by the orev over here, a couple of Rishonim discussed, I mean, on the face of it, how does the orev have the kumaseh of returning the ribbis? Maybe the male of the malveh, he's the one who took it. How does the orev how is he able to accomplish that asset? So they talk about maybe we shouldn't be godus orev over here. Maybe
they're not sure if there is an asset or not?
No. How is the Orev supposed to accomplish that asset? The malveh can accomplish it by returning the ribbis that he took.
Right.
The orev is a guarantor. He didn't actually take the ribbis. One answer is that we're talking about an Orev Kablon, where he's not just a plain old Orev where he guarantees it in case the other guy defaults. He's the one who actually pays it on behalf of the Loiva and then goes and collects from the Loiva, so therefore he actually has Ribbis in his hands for a while. Okay. Anyway.
He returns it from his pocket,
preposterous, yeah.
And then he has to collect it.
And then he would have to collect it from the Malva, I guess, yeah.
How can he collect it if it's Ribbis?
that he himself paid. He himself paid out ribis. That's what we're saying. In order for him to undo, that's the thing. We're saying that he has the he is able to return the money. That's what we're talking about. That he's able to accomplish
that.
Okay, that's a question. You could ask whether he's reimbursed or not. Let's not get into that. The point is that the malva and the arev both have the ability to undo the lav that they accomplished. Say Rabbi Nechemiah and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov by returning it. Interesting,
because the one who committed the lav is supposed to be the one who is.
That's what we're saying. Right. The malva is the one who committed one of the lav, and by receiving the order of kablon also. The order of kablon also. If we're saying it's an order of kablon, he also took ribis. He's the one who collected ribis from the loiva and then handed it over to the malva. So fine, he's able to return ribis. Yeah. Interesting thing, by the way, that Rashi uses the expression that they're potter from loisese and malchus. The Pnei Yeshua asks, what do you mean they're potter from the loisese? And he answers, because if we say that it's a lab hanitik la'ese, what it means is when they accomplish the ese, returning the ribis, it not only wipes away the possibility of malchus, it wipes away as if they never did the loisese in the first place. That's how Rashi learns. Yeah. Anyway, so my kumase. Now, what kumase is there involved? Lav mishum damir and lo kumo aduru. L'chura, the essay is that you should go return what you took. So there.
It's over the run, right?
No, we're talking about deraisa. Yeah, we're talking about actual ribis. Deraisa.
They return. They're not over the neshach. Nothing.
Well, that's what the Pnei Yeshua says. That's how Rashi is learning that according to Reb Nechemiah and Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, if we say right now at this point in the discussion, if we say that returning ribis is an eser which undoes the lav, then it means it undoes it completely, as if they never did it. Yeah. So l'chora, that's the eser that they have to return it. Miklal the Tanakama Sava Lav Bnei Adurin. Now, evidently, then Reb Nechemiah and Reb Elazar ben Yaakov have to be arguing with somebody. They're arguing with the Tanakama in that Braisa, who evidently says it's not a lav hanitik la'ese. They would say that not only the loiva, the loiva for sure, everybody would agree, becomes chayav malchus because he paid ribis, and there's no way for him to undo it with an ese. But the Reb Nechemiah and Reb Elazar and Yaakov are arguing that the malva and the orev can undo it. But evidently the Tanakama disagrees. Because he says you can't return it. There you go then. That Tanakama could be like, the Tanakama would be like Rabbi Yechanan, and Rabbi Nechemiah, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would be like Rabbi Elazar.
Can return it, or it doesn't help?
It doesn't help to return it, in other words. Returning it doesn't undo the lav. There's still chayav malchus for it.
Go ahead and return it.
It's not going to do you any good yet. The answer is loy, no, because my kum esa likroya shtara. No, because you could answer that the kum, no, he likes to use that as well. You could argue when we're saying that the malva or the orev have the ability to undo the lav with an eser, we're not talking about the eser of returning the ribis. We're talking about likroya shtara. They could accomplish it by ripping up the shtar. You could say, in other words, that maybe you could argue. Rashi learns like this. The Gemara is saying at this point, you could argue maybe that both the Tanakama and Reb Nechemiah and Reb Elazar ben Yaakov all agree with Reb Yochanan that returning the ribis is not going to help. You still haven't undone the lav by that. You're still going to be chayav malchus. What would it mean? How do they say that you could become potter from malchus? You, the malva or the arev, would be by ripping up the shtar.
Without giving back the ribis.
No, in other words, giving back the ribis in and of itself doesn't help. So, Tosfos understands Rashi to mean, in other words, like we're saying, that everybody agrees with Rabbi Yochanan that returning the ribis doesn't help. We'll see in a second. Tosfos asks on that, which is that in that case the mahalach of the Gemara doesn't seem to flow. First, the Gemara was asking from this braisa on Rabbi Yochanan. Now we're saying fakert that we said it's a machloek tanoim. Now we're going 180 degrees different and saying they all agree with Rabbi Yochanan. So relax, please. Relax. So Tosfos learns it differently. No, Fakir. They're all agreeing with Rabbi Elazar that you do have to return the ribis. The question is that enough to undo the lav, or maybe do you need something else? Maybe do you need the whipping up the shtar? There are Rishonim who understand Rashi to be saying that it's not a question of what it is yes, you could be returning the money, but that eser is not directly related to the lav. It's like it's a separate thing. The lav remains a lav. You can now accomplish it. You're able to accomplish an eser returning it. That won't undo the lav, is what the Gemara is saying now. You'd still be chayav malchus. How can you undo the lav in such a way that you won't be chayav malchus? Is by whipping up the shtal. So the question is, my kasover. In that case, then what do they hold? Why is whipping up the shtar? Why does whipping up the shtar help? E kasover shtar ha'im and ligbus kigavu
yidam. When you whip up the shtar,
it means that the milver is no longer collectible.
Oh,
the milver as a whole.
You lost the whole loan.
Yeah.
So not only return the ribbis, but you lost
the whole thing.
Yeah. So. If you're going to hold, as the Gemara discusses in a few places, that once a shtar is written, it's as if it's already collected, because once you write out a shtar, it creates a shibud on the guy's karka, and karka is already, wherever it is, it's already as if it's in his rishus. Well, then, in that case, the isser has already been accomplished as soon as they wrote the shtar. How does ripping it up help? The ilab could go redomri, and if you're going to say that once a shtar is written, it's not considered yet collected until it actually gets collected, holoi ovid v'lei klum. Fine, then of course, at the time they wrote the shtar, nothing happened yet, no ribis has been collected. Why would only Rav Nechemia and Rav Elazar and Rav Elazar and Yaakov be the ones who say that they can be potter from Malchus that way? Why would the Tanna Kamma hold any differently? They didn't actually collect ribis yet.
And as you say, they
wrote through the shtar. Well, the answer is, yeah. Fine, it could be that they hold that a shtar that has not yet been collected with, it's not considered as if it was collected with. Then what did they accomplish? What aveda did they accomplish by writing the shtar? What they are telling us, the chiddush, is that as soon as they place the suma, meloshon loisa simun olav neshek, that as soon as ribis is assessed, even before it's actually collected, you're already over. In other words, we have like this. If the ribis was already collected, again, according to Rashi, the point is that we're saying returning it is not by itself is not going to accomplish anything. Because according to the Rishonim that said that it's an unrelated essay or whatever, according to Tosfos is Lashon, that's okay, you have to return it according to the Balazar, but that's not enough. Whatever it is, you have to whip up the shtar. What does whipping up the shtar accomplish? Just by writing the shtar, you were already over on one aspect of the issue of ribis. Lois is simun olav neshek. You already assessed ribis. You already wrote out a shtar that says, I am going to collect ribis from ployin.
Simun means assess.
Simun means to assess, yes. And therefore, as soon as you do that, even if the shtar was never actually collected with, you have, at that point, you have an assay, you have a mitzvah assay, whip up that shtar. And therefore, Rav Nechemia and Rav Elazar and Yaakov say, fine, once you whip up that shtar, you've undone the lois simun olav neshek. Therefore, no malchus.
Maybe just like ribis itself. Maybe by writing the char.
No, but the ribis hasn't actually been collected yet.
So they're saying writing the char.
No, but that's summa milsi. It's considered a significant thing. However, you can't say that they didn't actually collect ribis at that point. But they were over on lois simun olav neshek. They weren't yet over on lois sitim loiv neshek or any of those sort of, but they're
simun they were.
It's, yeah, well, then that's what we're saying. That can be undone.
Once he rips up that star, does he get his money back?
Who, the malva?
Yeah.
He has no star to be able to collect with.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he can't even demand it back in the basement.
Well, he could demand it could be a milval pet in that case. I guess he's still entitled to collect whether he'd have to have witnesses or something. Yeah, but he still couldn't collect from Kauke. He still can't collect from Kauke. He can only collect from Metalva. Yeah, but okay, if the witnesses themselves, if they sign on a shtar that has ribis, they're aiding more to show him. They might be possible aiders. That's all another. Yeah.
That's even worse.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Onward. The Gemara says, Hochi Nami Mitzabra, yeah, as a matter of fact, it seems logical to say that is the point of the Machlokas. It's not, because we learn in the Mishnah at the end of our parak, the Elu Ovin Beloisese, the following parties who are involved in a loan that involves Ribis are all over on a Loisese, Hamalva Valova Ha'orev Ha'edim. So, Mishlema Kulu Ovid Meiser. Now, you have to ask, we can understand why the Malvan, the Lovan, the Orev, Oral Chayev, on a lab, why they're all over on a Loiseser, and Chayev Malchus even, because they all did something. The Lova gave the Ribis, the Malva received it, and the Orev, again, if we're talking about an Orev Tavlon, he actually took it from one and gave it to the other. Ela Edom, my other, Lachora, what Maisa did the Edom do? Ela Lav Shmamina de Summa Milsi. Obviously, in other words, because the Edom weren't involved in the actual giving of the Ribis, they were only involved in signing the Shtar. Therefore, Ela Shmamina de Summa Milsi. There you go. There you have a proof that Summa, that Loisa Simun, already is considered a significant thing, and therefore the Edom were already over on an Isser, on an Isser Lav once they did that. Mm-hmm. So therefore, Rav Nechemia and Rav Elizabeth Yaakov hold, fine, but that can be canceled out by ripping up the Shtar.
Can we say that it's just in the case where there's a kavlan, there are kavlans which simon means?
No, the simon is the simon regardless. Yeah. Once the shtar is written, we're saying the specific case when an orev could be chayev would have to be
from the kavlan.
Yes.
But it applies.
No, it does. The orev we're just mentioning as a side thing. No, right. Primarily it's the malva and the loiva. Yeah.
Ripping it up goes back.
So ripping it up, it retroactively cancels out the loisa simon all of Nesha. Yeah.
Because really it's the source of the transaction.
Yeah.
Is the
shtar. Yeah. I mean, by the way, all this time we're mentioning, because Rashi mentions the concept of Malchus, I should mention that Rambam holds that you're not chayav Malchus for any of the Yisurim of Ribis anyway, and Mephoshim explained that the Rambam would learn our Gemara somewhat differently, that the bottom line is, Ribis, ultimately, it is possible to return it. Again, the halacha in the end is like Rabbi Lazar, that anything that's also is Ribis deraisa, the dayanim can force you to return it, or you yourself can voluntarily return it, lotis yidei shemayim. Therefore, in that sense, the lava nitikla eser. You could, in that sense, have the one eser returning it cancels out all the various lavim of Ribis. Therefore, no malchus. Omer of Sakhir. So, yeah. Well, that's, yeah. Okay, so that proves it, that summa milsi, that just writing out a shtar with ribis is already a significant thing. What? Our Gemara seems to be saying. That's the thing. Ramban and other Rishonim explain in the Shitta of Rashi that the point is, you have, there's an issur to take ribis. Yes, you have a mitzvah of a chayach b'sayimach that we said before to return it. But according to them, it's not a specific effort to return it. You shouldn't take ribis in order that your brother can live. Once you took it, yeah, you can accomplish, you were returning it as a species of zela, you're accomplishing the heshiv as a zela, but you're not really undoing the various lavim that you did by taking it in the first place.
Although we have no really source to say that.
But that's
Gemara seems to be assuming it, but doesn't come really to demonstrate that.
Okay. And again, maybe that's why the Rambam holds that it is a lava nitikla. So, yeah,
right.
Okay. Omer of Sakra. Klosh ilu b'dineyem metia miloi v'lamalva. Here's a general rule. Any case of ribis where in Goyish court they would force the loiva to pay it to the malva, well, in our laws, since we don't allow ribis, then we would say that's the kind of ribis which we force the malva to repay the loiva. As opposed to kol she'ilu
b'dinein.
In machlokes d'dinein doesn't apply where it contradicts halacha. If two Jews go and write up a shtar, that's going to be judged in a goyish court, which you're not allowed to anyway, you're supposed to go to Beis Din. But if one yid writes up an IOU to another one that says that I'm borrowing money from you at interest, fine, the laws of the land allow it. The Torah doesn't allow it. Yenidimachos has no ability to override that. Okay. So, any case, in other words, that the Goyim would consider to be valid, normal ribis, and therefore they would say, you wrote out a shtar that you're going to pay X amount of interest, we're going to obligate you to pay it, then that's something, which in halacha we would say that, fakir, you make the malva pay it back to a lawyer. As opposed to, kol she'ilu b'dinein ein metzin meloi v'lamalva, but cases where the Goyim would not consider it valid ribis. They would not consider it a case where we would force the loiva to pay that ribis. Then in our laws, we would say that's the kind of ribis that we don't force the malva to return. So what do we mean by that? Is this a universal rule? What about, for example, the case that we talked about before, and we'll talk about a great deal more towards the end of the perek about you borrow a saw of wheat from somebody, saying that you're going to pay him back a saw, and you have the problem that meanwhile the price of wheat goes up, and then you're paying him a saw of wheat which is worth more than what you borrowed. Now, in Goyish laws, they would say, okay, you borrowed a saw, you have to pay back a saw. It costs more. Not our problem. You got to pay it. However, in our laws, we say such a thing is only considered ribis d'rabban, because it wasn't a given at the time of the loan. Again, midaraisa, it's only ribis sutta, that's also when it was fixed at the time of the loan, I am going to pay you X amount extra. With this saw, the saw, there isn't necessarily that, because the prices may go up, they may not. So that's ribis d'rabban. We don't make you return it. So we see it's not
because
a general rule.
It doesn't have a shar.
Well, you weren't allowed to do it because there wasn't yotza shar at the time, right? There wasn't yotza shar at the time, right? So you weren't allowed to do it. But if you did it, it's only ribis d'rabban.
So basically, we're saying you need
to. So there you have an
example. We make him return.
Ribis d'rabbanan, we don't. But here we have an example of ribis d'rabbanan. The goyim on the face of it would say you have to pay it.
Yeah, we
but we say, not we say you don't. We say you don't. The malva does not have to return it.
Right.
Yeah. Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef answers, the difference is the goyim wouldn't look at that as a matter of ribis. They would look at it as a matter of pikadon. I gave you a saw, therefore I expect a saw back. The fluctuations in price don't matter. They don't look at it as a halva. When Rav Sakra is saying his rule, he's talking about things which Goyish laws would consider a loan, not something like this, which they'd consider a pikadon. Amalei Ravina l'Ravashi, v'harei mashkanta b'loi nachyaisa. What about, here's another case. You have a case where one person lends money to the other one. The loiva uses his vineyard, Rashi gives as an example, as collateral for it, where the deal is that throughout the term of the loan, until the loiva pays back the loan, the malva is going to be able to eat the peiros, is going to be able to eat the peiros of that vineyard. Now, later on in the perek, we're going to talk about it a little bit more today, Bez Hashem, but we'll talk about it more extensively later on in the perek, that there's various ways in which such a thing is mutter. Namely, when you deduct on an annual basis however much he ate, you deduct it from the loan. So eventually you're paying off the loan using the payers. Such a thing is mutter. But if you do it without nachyaisa, if you do it without deductions like that, then it's also midrabanan. It's not also midaraisa, by the way, because, again, it's not a given that it's going to happen. It's later on in the perek we'll see there's a difference between, for example, a house or a store or something where there's a guaranteed income stream. As long as the house or a store or whatever exists, you're going to have rental income from it. Mashen can, let's say, a vineyard, you always have the possibility of crop failures. Rivet Sadech we'll talk about a little bit later on, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But so right. But nevertheless, it's also midrabanan. Again, the B'dinei and Metzi and Meloiva LaMalva. Now, if you were to make such an agreement between a Loiva and a Malva, Goyish courts would force you to honor it. They'd say, you Loiva are obligated to give that fruit to the Malva for him to enjoy throughout the life of the loan. Again, in our laws, we say that's only considered ribis d'rabanan. Because again, it's not a given that he's going to end up with more than he started with, because there may be crop failures or whatever, and therefore we don't force the malva to return it. So it's only dirabanan. So there you have another example. L'chora, this is a case of an actual, even the goyim would consider it an actual halva, and yet we say that something which they consider an actual loan with interest, we don't consider it interest d'oraisa. Amalei, so he says. Same kind of idea. Inu b'tardes zvini osulia dayu. Yes, but in that case, the goyish courts would look at it not so much as a loan, but rather as a sale. That, in other words, they look at it as long as the loan was not paid off, the vineyard is temporarily sold to you until either a certain amount of time has passed or the loan is paid back or whatever, and then it reverts to the original owner. So therefore, okay, it was sold. Well, then you're entitled to the fruit. They don't look at it as a loan with a mortgage, sort of. They would look at it as a sale. Okay. Well, then ela kolshi libidinan to kamer of sakra mayal salash minin. Fine. Then what's the chiddush of Rav Sakra's statement? Then, if we excluded all, what is the case that we're talking about that the goyim consider valid interest and we consider ribis d'oraisa, and the case that they don't consider it valid interest and we consider it ribis d'rabanan? Right there. Hochi also lashminim. Rav Satra wants to tell us a chiddush like this. When we say kol she'ilu b'dinein metzien milover l'malva b'dinein machzirin malva l'lover or mayim niu b'ribis chutza, that means plain old, regular ribis minatora, the kind where we said, I'm borrowing 100 from you and I will pay back 110. Plain old ribis deraisa, which again, goyish courts would enforce such an agreement because they don't have an issue against ribis. In that case, what Rav Safra wants to tell us with that part of his statement is, he wants to tell us, you should know the halacha is like Rav Elazar, not like Rav Yochanan that we said yesterday that even such ribis is not collectible by the Dayanim. No, we're saying it is. And the second part that he's saying, kol she'ilu b'dinein ein metzien b'dineinu ein machzirin, what is the case where he's saying that a case where the goyish courts would not enforce it, then we say our courts, our batei dinim, don't require the malva to return it. That is ribus mukdemes ribus mu'ucheres. That is, for example, a case that we're going to talk about, again, towards the end of the parak, that he pays ribus in advance or ribus after the fact. Ribus in advance is, for example, that he goes and sends him some money in advance, as later on I plan to come and borrow money from you. Such a thing is also. However, it's not something that the Goyish courts would enforce. In that case, it's already given, but ribis mocheres more the other way around, where I previously borrowed money from you. I paid it back already. Now, after I paid back, one day I show up with a gift for you for having previously lent me money. The Goyish courts wouldn't enforce such a thing. There's no agreement to enforce. If there's a voluntary thing that he does on his own. And we're saying that's not ribis chutzah because it wasn't established at the time of the loan. It's only osam adrabanan, and that is the kind of thing we're talking about that the batei dinim would not force the malva to give that back. So it's osam adrabanan, but if the malva ended up taking it, the beis din wouldn't force him to return it
because it wasn't prearranged
exactly. Only prearranged is osam adrabanan. Okay. Now
so
getting
not considered ribis.
Well, it is considered ribis, but it's ribis drabon. Yeah.
Okay. There's no set amount, basically. He gives back what.
Well, it doesn't matter whether there's a set amount or not. Right. Ribis chutza just means that we prearranged at the time of the loan that I'm going to pay you extra. Right? Whatever the extra amount is. Here, it wasn't prearranged. Here, it's previously, I planned to borrow money from you next month, so I gave you a gift in advance, or I borrowed money from you last month, so I'm giving you a gift now. Either way, it's ribus mukdemus, or ribus mukheres, it's author, but if he did it, then Beis Din can't force him to give it back. Okay, now getting into the actual case of our Mishnah, of ribus d'rabbanan. Now we're going to start getting into the nitty-gritty of what ribus d'rabbanan is. Mishnah said Ketza, Lokach emen achitim b'din azav akur v'chein ashah v'chola. So, the straightforward understanding of the case we had in the Mishnah is as follows. We're going to see soon in the Gemara whether this straightforward understanding is correct. But let's start with the basic understanding, the way when we learned the Mishnah, how we learned it. We have, Reuben paid a gold dinar, 25 silver dinarim, to Shimon for a quart of wheat. He didn't actually pick up the wheat at the time. But that was the price for chen ashar. That was the price at the time. So that's how much he paid. Later on, the price of wheat goes up. It's now a quart of wheat is now worth 30 silver dinarim. Reuben says, "I'd like to pick up my wheat now because I want to go and trade it for wine worth 30 dinarim." Shimon says, "You know what? Since you want to trade it for wine anyway, let's not bother. I'll keep my wheat. I'll consider I owe you 30 dinar worth of wheat. Instead, I'll give you 30 dinar worth of wine." Whenever you want. However, right now he doesn't have any wine in stock. That was the scenario in the Mishnah. Rashi, by the way, we're going to see the Rashi and Tosfos have different understandings, which is going to affect which is going to affect parts of our sugya over here. About everybody agrees the second part about the wine is no good because ain loy, because there's no, because so you didn't have wine at the time. With the Gemara, we'll discuss what exactly the problem with it is. Rashi and Tosfos argue, what about the original part with the chitim? Was that allowed or not? Rashi learns that, yes, that first part was fine. There was yotza hashar, there was a prevailing price for wheat, 25 dinar per kur. Therefore, he was entitled to lock in the price at that point, and if it goes up later on, then that's fine. The problem is only when we're doing that, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara now, the fact that we're going to turn that into instead a debt that's going to be paid off with wine, for reasons which we'll see in the Gemara.
That's the problem.
That's the problem. Tosfos learns that
Tosfos, the wine.
No, that's what the problem is. Yeah, Tosfos learns that even the part with the wheat was problematic. The fact that the original arrangement where he paid him money for the wheat, where the price went up afterwards, and then the price went up afterwards. That itself, Tosfos learns that the Gemara is going to say that part was the problem as well already.
Even if he actually did money.
No, if he had wheat at the time, there's no question. We're going to talk about that we didn't have any of the extenuating circumstances. We didn't have Yos HaShar. We didn't have Yeshlo. Yeah.
So there's no Yos HaShar. He's got wheat. He needs wine. He bought wheat with money. I borrowed money from you.
No, there was no borrowing over you.
I bought a wheat from you.
Right, but I didn't actually give you delivery of the wheat at the time.
You paid for it,
but you didn't actually pick it up.
So I gave you 30 shekels.
No, you gave me 25, actually. 25 dinar.
Right. 25 dinar.
25 dinar. Later on, the price goes up. It's now worth 30 dinar. You want to pick up your wheat. And I say, instead of me giving you wheat, you want 30 dinars worth of wine? Fine. I'll make it that now I have you. I owe you a debt of 30 dinars worth of wine.
So if you would have given me the wheat, and I would have sold the wheat immediately and given you 30 dinar and taken the wine, there would be no ribbon.
Right, because then there, yeah.
What happens if you take an option for a futures contract on the wheat that you don't have? So you give me money to buy wheat. I don't have the wheat, but I buy it at a certain price. And that price will remain the same.
So basically, if there's a prevailing price, that's fine. Yos HaShar. Wait.
What?
That's called Yos HaShar. That's called, once there's a prevailing price, we're fine.
Okay.
The reason
why that mechanism may be.
Yeah. There's actually two explanations, which we'll see. Rashi gives one over here. The Gemara gives another one later on some Gimel on the Beis, why it is that Yos HaShar works. One of them is because if in that scenario, if Reuben gives Shimon 25 dinar to buy wheat, and right now Shimon doesn't happen to have any wheat in stock, so therefore he can't give it to him. However, if Yos HaShar, if there is a prevailing price out there, fine. Shimon could easily go and find somebody to sell him wheat at 25 dinar the quarter and give it to Reuben right there on the spot. He would be able to take that 25 dinar, go find somebody else who has wheat for sale, buy it from him, and give it to Reuben. Therefore, we can consider it in a certain sense as if he already had it, and therefore, if it rises in value, fine. Reuben already owns it, and fine, it's appreciating in price.
There is the price.
That's what we're talking Yos HaShar when there's a prevailing price.
Right, but can prevailing price? Yos HaShar is basically meaning that there's enough supply that the price is
the price is stable, right?
But if it's like certain kinds of rare diamonds where there's no
we're talking about things that.
That's not Yos HaShar.
Therefore, today,
my question is this. Today, even if those prices fluctuate, we have financial instruments that can set a price between the buyer and the seller, regardless of the fluctuation on the market. I'm asking that question whether or not this is ribis or it's not ribis. Even
you're locking in a price, but is there a prevailing price? Could that commodity have been bought at that price on the open market? If yes, Yos HaShar.
It has to be viable on the open market.
All commodities,
yeah.
We would say Yos HaShar.
What?
No.
Yeah.
All commodities.
No, not.
You would say Yos HaShar.
No, not necessarily. Because, for example, wheat has a season. When it's out of season, then it's not.
You see gas going up and down.
Yeah. But
no, but it has a certain...
It has a certain floor value, fine, but that's not the same as Yos HaShar, where it has a prevailing price, where prevailing means where it's a fixed price for a certain period of time. Yeah.
No,
so anyway.
So we don't see that. I see that there is a prevailing price for commodities.
It fluctuates
from year to year. But it doesn't have wide fluctuations.
So, right. So certain things that don't really have a season yet. But we're talking about things that are seasonal. Crops, for example, are seasonal.
And so within
a season, eventually there's Yos HaShar, which remains for an entire season. That's Yos HaShar. as opposed to a
shahr would be for the
season. In other words, let's take for example wheat. At the very beginning of the season, at the very beginning of the harvest season, it's not yet yatsa shahr because there's not enough supply on the market. One guy harvests his wheat very early, and he can charge whatever the market will bear. And another guy the next day goes and does his harvest, and now the price starts dropping. So there's no fixed amount for any length of time. Eventually, most of the farmers in that area have done their wheat harvest, and now there's a supply. Now there's a regular supply in the market, and now there's
the warehouses with wheat. So that is
what. No, on the contrary, the first guy who does his harvest is going to be more expensive, won't it? Okay, I don't know, maybe.
No, but now there's storehouses there that they have.
So to a certain extent, it smooths out,
I
guess.
Wheat supply is about two.
All right, whatever, fine. So maybe nowadays.
Small amount, but still there's storehouses and things are stored.
Okay.
Apples are stored and they're frozen for about.
Fine, okay. So maybe nowadays with globalization, there's less fluctuation than there was before. Okay, whatever.
I would say there's much more fluctuation. It varies from hour to hour.
Okay, new. It depends what commodity.
But the variance is very.
Okay, new. Let's.
No, it's not very simple.
We have to move on.
Come on.
It could be 1 or 2 cents. It depends, or it's part of a cent.
Okay, Avraham Moshe, come on. Let's continue over here. We can discuss modern economics another time. All right. Okay. I understand, but it is. But we have to discuss what halacha is telling us over here. Then we'll figure out. Another time.
What's shahr?
Shahr is the price.
No. Okay, let's go back to the
Yatsa HaShahr, again, there's two reasons why Yatsa HaShahr works, to avoid issues of riddance. One is because once you receive the money, you could have gone and bought some on the open market and given it to the buyer, and therefore you can consider as if he already has it in his possession, and any increase in its price is he owns the commodity already, and now it's increasing in its price under his watch, which is fine. The other way of looking at it is because, again, we said at the beginning of the parak, the idea behind ribis is called agar netter. You're gaining something for the fact that you're waiting to get your money paid back or your goods delivered or whatever it is. So what happens if right now there's yatsa HaShahr, if when Reuven gives that money to Shimon, the prevailing price is 25, then instead of giving it to Shimon, Reuven himself could have just as easily taken that 25 and gone to somebody else and bought wheat on the spot. He's not gaining anything from the fact that he gave the money now to Shimon, and later on he's going to end up getting more because he could have just as well bought right then on the spot. So those are the two reasons why Yatsa HaShahr works. Okay. So the Gemara asks, "V'chi ein lo yayin mai habi?" Okay, in the case of our Mishnah, when we say the second part of the case was that he says, "I want to pick up my wheat," and the other guy says, "Instead of wheat, I'll give you 30 dinar worth of wine." What's the problem if he doesn't have wine? L'chora, we're talking about that yatsa HaShahr. If we talk about yatsa HaShahr as far as wheat, the pastures, it's that way also for wine.
We don't know how long the shahr is going to stay.
Yatsa HaShahr means it's going to last for a certain period of time. It's stable for a certain period of time. It doesn't have to be stable forever. It has to be stable for the season. Well, we'll see later on in the parak. We'll see how long it has to be stable for. For right now, let's just take it as written that there's a certain period of time that yatsa HaShahr. So once Yatsa HaShahr, what's the problem? Why can't he make such a contract about wine? Ba'atanya, don't we learn it over Ba'atnan? We learn it in a Mishnah later on in our parak. In poskin ala peres atzi Yatsa HaShahr, you cannot make contracts about that I'm going to give you money in advance and you will give me peres later on in the season once they're harvested until there is a prevailing price, until there is a fixed price that's known, that it's selling for that price. Yatsa HaShahr, but once the price is established, poskin, then you can make such conditions because even if one person, even if the one you're making the deal with right now doesn't happen to have wheat or wine or whatever it is in stock, other people will. And again, it points to the two possibilities of why Yatsa HaShahr works. Either way, either Shimon could have gone and used that money to buy it from somebody else, or Reuven himself, the original owner of the money, could have gone and bought it someplace else. Either way, it works. So what's the problem in our Mishnah? Amar Rabba, masnisin b'val locho b'dmeina. Yes, but the Mishnah is talking about where there's no actual money changing hands over here. We're not talking about that. We're not talking about, for example, that when, again, Reuven originally paid Shimon 25 for wheat in the future. We're not talking about that now. That now Shimon says, okay, I don't have the wheat to give you, therefore I'll return you your 25 dinar, and then they start a whole new transaction involving wine. We're talking about that he's saying, I owe you the value of that wheat. Now, you previously paid me for it. I'll consider it now a debt. And now, based on that debt, I'm going to owe you X amount. I'm going to owe you X amount of wine. So the problem with that is, therefore, so you're basically taking a loan and turning it into a larger loan. You're taking a loan of 25 and turning it into a loan of 30. That's Ribis de Rabbanan. And as we learn in a Braita, suppose that one person is owed a money by another person. The lender goes and stands by the granary. And he says, "Tain li ma'oisai, give me my money. Shani roi to lichach b'am chitim. I want to use that money to buy wheat." So the loiva says to him, "Chitim yeshli shani noisamach. Okay, I do have wheat that I'm able. I do have wheat that I can give you. Save our sale like a shayar shalachshav. Fine, go ahead and figure out how much wheat you'd be entitled to for your loan at the current prices. Vani alalach kol shnei mal sechodesh, and I'm not going to give you the wheat all in one lump amount now. I will gradually give it to you over 12 months, meaning even if the price goes up, I'll still continue supplying it to you at this price. That is usur. Why? Delav ki isra habol yodei dami, because it's not like a case where an isra is actually changing hands, where money is actually changing hands, where then you can say, fine, I'm giving you money and I'm locking in the price right now. Here you're doing it based on a halva, and therefore it's much more similar to ribbit. Because remember, he originally owed him money. Now what you're saying is, because you previously lent me money, therefore I'm going to be supplying you wheat at the current price, and if it ends up going in price, I'll eat the loss. That would be ribbit de rabbanan. It's similarly in our Mishnah then, when Shimon owes Reuven money for the wheat that he was supposed to supply and never did, and now he says, instead I want to convert that into a debt which I will repay in wine, but meanwhile the price of wheat has gone up and therefore you're going to get more wine than more value than you would have gotten in the first place, because it started out as a halva, you have a problem.
Okay. Waiting is a problem even if the price of the shahr doesn't move.
That's what we're saying. That's what Rabbi is arguing, because there's a difference between whether you actually pay money to lock in the price versus whether you're doing it based on an existing debt. Doing it based on an existing debt is much less like Mekach HaMemker. It's much more like Ribbit.
Before we were saying that it's only if there's no shahr.
Now Rabbi is pointing out even if you have that shahr, if it's based on a loan, you have a problem.
That's making it much more stringent.
But that's how Rabbi is learning it. Okay, then the question is, Omalei Abaye, Idoloi ki Yisra, Abol Yodei Dami, fine, but if you're going to say it like that, if you're going to say the problem is because you started out with a loan, my Yuya Eimlo, Yakuli Yeshla Nami, then why is the Mishnah mentioning that Shimon does not actually have wine right now, implying that that's the problem?
Right.
According to that, even if he has wine right now, you have the same problem.
Because
he's paying him based on a loan. And we just said, according to Rabbah, based on a loan, there's no Israel of all the other. Doesn't matter whether over time or not. No, he previously owed him money for the wheat that he paid him for and never delivered yet.
Right.
And now he's saying, now the price of wheat has gone up, and therefore instead we're going to revalue that loan using wine, at 30, using wine.
Right.
Shouldn't matter whether he has wine or not. Either way, no, there's no Israel of all the other. You're starting off with a loan, and therefore you can't do that. No, Abaya says you have to understand our Mishnah using a braisa that Rav Safra taught in the dinim of Ribis as they were taught in the yeshiva of Rav Chiya, meaning Rav Chiya made the various famous collections of braisas, such as the Tosefta. He had a collection of braisas on the dinim of Ribis, which Rav Safra learned. And it goes as follows. There are certain kinds of arrangements that technically should be mutter. However, they are also because it's like trickery in order to take ribis. Suppose one person says to the other, lend me a mona. The other one says, I don't have a mona right now. But I can give you a mona's worth of wheat. Not from the chitin b'mona. So, okay, he gives him a mona worth of wheat. So far, no problem. Then he says, you know what? then the loiver resells that wheat to the malva instead of for a mona, which is 25 sloim, he resells it to him for 24 sloim. So he's giving him a discount. He's giving him a few percent discount. Exactly. Well, not really. Mutter. Technically, such a thing should be mutter. But also, lasses came with nehar romas to ribis. But you're not allowed to do that because it's like a subterfuge. It's like a tricky way of collecting ribis. Because it amounts to that now the malva has gained. Now the malva has 100, now the malva has 25 stelas worth of wheat, for which he paid only 24. Yeah.
But you could say the same thing about the sale.
Because, again, it started with halveni money. It started with lendi. Hachanami, the same thing over here in our Mishnah. Kivin to Omer Halveni Shloshim Dinrim, we're talking about over here then in our Mishnah. Suppose that he says, lend me 30 dinrim. And so Abaye is reinterpreting the case of our Mishnah. We're talking about that Reuven comes to Shimon and says, lend me 30 dinrim. He's saying, I don't have 30 dinarim, but I have 30 dinars worth of wheat, which I can give you. So he gives him 30 dinar of wheat. And now begins the case of our mission of a chaz of a lachem and a bedinar zahav. And then the malva goes and repurchases it for him for gold dinar, 25 seller, 25 dinar. In other words, Abaye understands that the case when our Mishnah starts off that he paid him 25 silver dinarim for wheat is actually the middle of the scenario. There was a backstory over here that the Mishnah is not telling us. Namely, why is he giving him 25 dinar for wheat? Because previously the other guy took that amount of wheat from him at the value of 30 dinarim, and now he's giving him a discount, reselling it to him for 25, which is the haramas ribis that we just talked about. So now we understand what the difference is, whether he actually has wine or not. In the second part of it, when he says, let's instead convert this 30 dinar into 30 dinar worth of wine, like that. So if the loiva at this point has wine which he can give him for 30 dinar, fine. In that case, then you just have it's an exchange of peiros for peiros. He's giving him 30 dinar worth of wheat, and in return he's getting 30 dinar worth of wine. The less one bar, then it's no problem. Then it's an exchange. There's no ribis involved. The eloi, but if not, given to less lechamra. Since he doesn't have wine, and what he's doing therefore is he's taking money from him. Money is a more serious thing. When he actually takes 30 dinar from him in cash, that looks much more like ribis. When he's taking 30 dinar worth of wine, it's not so obvious. That it's ribis. The whole thing is dirabanan. But therefore, when it comes to payros, when it comes to if he's giving him 30 dinars worth of wine, fine, we can be maple on that. Maybe it would be haramas ribis, but it doesn't at least look like ribis. But when he actually gives him money, where he to begin with said, "Lend me 30 dinarim," and he gives him 30 dinar worth of wheat. And later on, he's going to be giving him 25 dinar in cash to repurchase the wheat. Then you have haramas ribis.
What is the pshat? What is the bring back thing that Yagin ain't like? Didn't have wine.
That's the point, because if he had wine, then he would give him wine on the spot, and then there would be no haramas ribis.
But originally, he was not yet chitim, but he didn't give it to him.
Again, Abaye is explaining that the Mishnah is sort of starting in the middle of the case, that he did have wheat. He said, instead of lending you 30 dinar in cash, I'll lend you 30 dinars worth of wheat. And then Reuven says, well, actually, I don't really need 30 dinars worth of wheat. What am I going to do with that? I'll resell it to you for 25 dinars. So you'll gain that way. And that's also Mepneha Ramas Ribis. So now if he takes that 25 dinar, and if now he takes that 25 dinar and says, you know what, instead of paying you 25 dinars worth of cash, I will give you 30 dinar worth of wine. So if he actually has wine, then fine, such a thing is allowed. But because it started off with 30 and now it's 30. But if he's going to give him cash, then you have a problem. Amalei Rava, Ihochi, if that's how you're going to understand it. Ken lichitai, what do you mean that the guy says, give me my wheat that I previously purchased from you? Dmei chitai meboilei. He should be saying, give me the value of my wheat, because he doesn't want to be paid back in wheat. He wants to be paid back in cash.
He gave it in cash, right?
He wanted to borrow cash. The other guy didn't have. He had wheat. So now he gives him wheat as a loan. Now he's saying, I'll resell you that wheat for cash. So then in that case, it's cash. Dmei chitai.
You should pay it back in cash.
The answer is, okay, Tony Dmei Chitai, fine. Tony Dmei Chitai, fine. Abaya can understand the mission. It doesn't literally mean he says, I want my wheat. I want the money. I want the cash for the wheat that I previously sold you, and now I'm going to be buying back from you at a discount.
Our mission is to tell you that he gave him money for wheat.
No, because the middle of the case does involve that there's money. Okay. Shani Moichu and Shemachu.
Do it at the same exchange.
Yeah, it's one after the other, yeah. Shani Moicher on Shemachachim Lachman, Shemachachim Lachman Bailey. Fine, you have another problem with the Mishnah. He's saying, I want to sell the wheat and use it to buy wine. According to Abaya's scenario, it means I already previously sold you that wheat, and now I want to exchange it for cash. Okay, Tani Shemachachim Lach. Okay, Abaya will say also, Shani Moicher doesn't mean that I want to sell them now. It can mean that I already sold before, that I already sold you before. Okay. What do you mean? Now let's revalue the wheat has gone up in price and now it's worth 30 dirhams. According to the scenario that Abaya is saying, the wheat to begin with was worth 30. So what are we saying? That now it's worth 30. The answer is
according to Abaya's scenario, the wheat was already worth 30.
The wheat was worth 30 at the beginning because he started by saying, lend me 30 dirhams. And the other guy says, I'll give you 30 dirhams worth of wheat. And then repurchases it for 25 from him.
So what's the problem?
Why is the Mishnah implying that the price of wheat has risen from 25 to 30 in a biased scenario? It started out at 30. Answer is, Hachi Kamalei. Fine, the Mishnah can mean, Vidmei Chitecha Shas Tiso Alai B'Shloshim. Fine, for the value of your wheat, which you valued when you gave it to me as the original halva that set off the whole chain of events, you valued it at 30. At 30 jan. Okay, so again, it's just a linguistic thing. Okay, what about Harei Lecha Esli Yayin V'Yayin? What do you mean the Mishnah continues? He says, fine, I'll trade you. Instead of giving you your 30 dinar in cash, instead of giving you your wheat, I'll give you 30 dinar worth of wine. And we say he doesn't have wine. The Mishnah started off by saying that he paid a gold dinar, 25 silver dinar for a kur of wheat, and that was the price at the time. So what are you talking about? In a buyer scenario, when it started out, it was 30. So the whole mission doesn't fit according to our bias. Ella Omar Rava. So no, Rava gives a different answer, and he introduces it by saying Kish Chivna. When I pass away, Rav Oshia Nafik Lavasi. We had a similar thing in Bava Kama that Rav Oshia will come out to greet me. Demetarasna Masnitin Kavase, because he'll say that he appreciates that I regularly explain Mishnayos, where it's hard to understand the Mishnah, in accordance with Brisis that Rav Oshia taught. So therefore, he'll owe me one in Gan Eden that I said that his brises are correct and you can use them to explain obscure Mishnah. Namely, the Tani Rav Oshia, Hareisha Yenosha B'Chaver Emon. Now, this is we brought a similar brise before. Suppose we brought actually the beginning of this brise before in the discussion. Hareisha Yenosha B'Chaver Emon. Suppose you have a person was owed a mona by somebody else. V'holach v'omad al goyno, so he goes to the guy's grain, to the loiva's granary. V'omad tainli ma'oisai, give me my money. Shani roi to likach v'em chitin. I want to use that money to buy wheat. V'omad chitin yeshli shani noisimach. He says, okay, I have wheat, which I'm able to give you. Save asan ala kishar shalachshav. So go ahead, figure out how much wheat. You lent me $100, so go figure out how much wheat $100 will buy you at today's prices.
Lock it in.
Fine. Yeah, lock it in. Okay. He gives man chitin linker. Now, what happens later on when it comes time to sell the wheat, and by now the price has gone up? So the guy says, okay, well now give me my wheat. Give me my wheat. I want to sell it and buy wine with it. So the other guy says, okay, I have wine which I'm able to give you. Save asan ala kishar shalaksha. Fine, go figure out how much wine this amount would get you. Now remember, the price of wheat went up in between. You started out, he lent him 100. Now we're saying by the time it comes to sell the wheat, the price of that amount of wheat has risen to 110. So we're saying, okay, how much wine will 110 buy you? Yigiyaz man yayim limkor. Later on, it comes time to sell wine, and again, prices have gone up. V'amatein li yeni shani reitz l'mokhri. He says, give me my wine because I want to sell it v'likach for shemen and buy oil with it. Amal shemen yesh li shani reitz l'mokhri. Okay, I have oil. I'm able to give it to you. Save asey or like a shah shalakshav. Go figure out now, we're up to 120. Go figure out how much oil 120 will buy you. Now, the point that Braisa says is, kulam im yeshle mutter ein lo oser. In all those cases, if yeshle, if he actually has wheat or wine or oil in stock right now, then it is mutter. Wow. Now, before
we could exchange,
because he could exchange it. Because, okay, so, okay, well, Rashi says the reason is like this, because even if he didn't do Mashiach yet, once he paid money for it, you already have, as we learned in the previous parak, Misha Parah. You already have. If he wants to renege on the deal, he would be obligated to go to Beis Din and accept Misha Parah. Therefore, in that sense, you can say he's accomplished a certain degree of kinyan on it.
Because
to the extent that he be chayiv in Misha Parah if he reneged on the deal.
Even if he didn't do
Mashiach. We're going to see soon. Because that's the thing. Because once he paid money for it, as long as you have two factors. Number one, that he paid, number one, not really two factors. As long as you have the factor that yeshloi, that he actually has wine or wheat or whatever it is available right now, once the other guy either paid money for it or we're saying you don't even need paid money. Before we had rabbis understanding that if it's not Isra Habala Yado, if you're not actually, if money is not actually changing hands, if you're doing it based on Alba, you have a problem with ribbis. Rava is saying not like that. Rava is saying it doesn't matter whether Isra Habala Yado or not. The key thing is, does he actually have wheat or whatever it is in stock right now? If he does, even if it's not Isra Habala Yado, even if you're doing it based on an original loan, that's fine. Because, again, when he comes and says, I want to collect my debt, give me wheat, the other guy says, okay, I have wheat which I will set aside for you. I have wheat which I will set aside for you. Already at that point, to that extent, we consider as if that wheat is in the Malva's Rishur. Because he could have collected it right now. Therefore, if he wanted to. Therefore, when it goes up in price, fine. He owns wheat, it went up in price. Good. He earned himself some money. Now, later on, when we're trading it for wine, and we're trading that wine for oil, etc., however many steps it is, each time, that commodity is considered as if it's in his reshus already. Because it is, insofar as Misha Parah. So therefore, it works. So again, Rabba would say that not, because since the whole thing started with Halva, then Rabba would say that no, that doesn't work. But we said that we don't understand how that fits with the Mishnah, because the Mishnah distinguishes between Yeshlei and Einloi. Now, based on Rabbi Oshia's price, so we can understand why there's a difference between Yeshlei and Einloi. Because if yeshloi, then already we can consider the thing is in his possession. Therefore, there's no issue of this because it's already in his possession enough that it would trigger Misha Parah if he wanted to renege on the deal. Whereas if Einloi, if the guy doesn't have wheat or wine or what have you, then you have a problem of this.
Well, did Aisha thank Rava in the end?
I'm sure he did. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, my lokach. Lokach b'halva asay. Now then, what do you mean when the Mishnah says so the one thing we have left to understand that is when the Mishnah started by saying lokach hamenu chitin b'dinu zav akur, when he literally lokach usually means he bought. If he bought wheat from him at the price of a gold dinner per kur, what does it mean lokach? Would have to mean lokach b'halva asay. That he doesn't mean lokach as in he bought it, but rather he took it. Doesn't have to be that he took delivery. He took it in the sense that he agreed that you will repay me your debt with the wheat that you have. But it was based on an original halva. That's the thing. Rabbi is saying as long as yeshloi, as long as at each stage of the chain you have yeshloi, then we're fine. Now Rashi says, well, we said before that Rashi says. That Rashi says the part with the wheat actually was okay in the Mishnah. It's the part with the wine that was no good. Therefore, Rashi says, I don't like that gear. So what do you mean, my lokach b'halva asay? That would imply to say that there was a problem with the wheat in the first place because there was an initial halva. So Rashi takes out those words. Tosfos says, again, Tosfos' shitta is that there was a problem with the wheat part in our Mishnah as well because it's talking about he didn't actually have wheat at the time. Aimloy, and therefore Tosfos
Rashi
believes,
only when he has to exchange it for wine.
For Rashi, only the part where he comes to exchange it for wine becomes the problem. According to Tosfos, even the part with the wheat was the problem, because again, there was Aimloy at the time. Again, based on what we're saying, if there was an original halva, then based on the, if he comes now to say, I want my halva to be paid off, give me wheat, and the other guy doesn't have wheat at the time, then there's no mishapara, there's no nothing, therefore you'd have a problem of ribbis if the wheat goes up in price.
No, exactly.
Omar Rabba, Shma Mino Mid Rav Oshi Atzlas. Okay, based on this braisa of Rav Oshi, we can learn three dinim that apply to ribbis. Shma Mino Dma Midin Milva Agave Peiros. Number one, we can reestablish that if you're owed money by somebody else, you can go and say it will be paid off using Peiros, using the current prices, lock in the current prices, even if they go up later. That works. We don't say, like we said before, in Rabba's opinion, in Rapia's opinion, that because it's not Israel Bali Yadu, because no money is actually changing hands right now, therefore it's a problem of business. We don't say that. Number two, Shmami no Hudi Yeshloi. Number two, this only applies though if Yeshloi, if he actually has the payers available right now. Well, Shmami no Isir the Rabbianai. Number three, we can learn from this Braisa that we should accept as correct what Rabbi Yannai says. So Amar Rabbi Yannai, Mali Hein Mali Jmehen. Namely, Rabbi Yannai says in the next discussion that we're going to have now, that when it comes to making these kinds of deals in advance about Paris, it doesn't matter whether you receive the actual Paris or the money. Statesman, as in fact, we have a discussion. Rav Amar Oysen Amonim Paris. Rav says that you can make a deal, Amonim literally means trusting. So you can make a deal of amana, namely, again, you locking in the current prices, that I'm going to give you, there's right now Yosar Shah, I'm going to give you a certain amount of money, which later on in the season you'll give me payers, and if the price goes up, you'll eat that difference. You're able to do that. The Ein Oysen Amana B'Domim. But Rav says, you're not allowed to do that on the deal that later on you're going to get money, you're going to get money when they go up in value. Meaning, in other words, so if we say, for example, right now wheat is going for $10 a bushel. So we're saying, let's say, I'm paying you $100. That means I'm entitled to 10 bushels of wheat. And if later on they go up to $12 a bushel, I'll get 12. That, Rav says, is fine. But to say, I'm giving you $100 as a loan right now. That will buy me right now 10 bushels of wheat. Later on, when wheat ends up later on in the season, wheat is now up to $12 a bushel, you're going to give me $120. Rav would say that's awesome. Because that looks more like ribbit. You gave him money and you're getting back a larger amount of money. Yeah, of cash, yeah. But Rav Yane, I'm a Mali Hain Mali Demay, or Mali Demay. Whereas Rav Yane says, no, if you're allowed to take the actual wheat, then who cares whether you're taking the wheat or the dummy? Now,
according to Rav Yane, ribis has to be in money.
Okay, so, so he's saying you are allowed to get the money. Tosfos brings that the Rashbam understands this, say not that according to Rav Yane, you could actually get money back. For sure, getting money back according to the Rashbam would have much more of an appearance of ribis, and therefore would be a problem. What it means is, it doesn't have to be that he pays him in wheat. It can be it pays him in some other commodity, such as wine, which fits with the braisa that we said before, because where you turn the wheat into wine, turn the wine into oil, etc.
Mali
Hain, Mali Dmehen. Dmehen doesn't mean actual cash. Oh. Dmehen means the cash value of it in some other commodity, such as wine. Rabbi Natan says in Tosfos that no, actually, you would be allowed to take actual money, because it wasn't based on that there was necessarily going to be that I locked in the price at the time. I paid you for 10 bushels of wheat. You didn't know it was going to go up or not. And later on, I would have been entitled to collect the 10 bushels of wheat. Well, instead, I'm entitled to collect the value of those 10 bushels, says Rabbi Yannai.
Even if the price has gone up.
So we see that we see from the previous braisa that such a thing is allowed, because we say that the guy originally lent him money, he ends up collecting a lot more oil, for example, than what he originally lent out. So
we said that was previously upsur.
That was according to Rava. Now we're saying according to Rava. Yeah. Now we're saying, according to Rava, on the basis of the Braisa of Rav Oshia, we're saying such a thing as mutter. And he says, we can see from Rav Oshia's Braisa that we even accept Rav Yanai's position that you're able to get the actual money itself.
That's it from the Mishnah Berurah.
Yeah. Next question is, maybe, I have a contradiction. The Braisa said, kulam yeshloi mutter. We said that in all these cases, right. if Yeshlo, if he actually has some in stock, right. then it's mutter.
It's implying that he didn't, he was not mutter.
Right, implying, in other words, yeah. Implying that it
contradicts the price.
Well, here, let's look at the Rashi in Yeshlo Mutter, or clarify a little. The Rashi is about the middle of the middle sideline. Mehadir of Oshia Kamosis. We're using the Im Yeshloi comes from Oshia's Braisa from the beginning of the Yomud. Bahacha Domim Kamakabel. Over here, what's happening is he is receiving money. Shashamal of Meachitin, Makabla Yain, Shashamal of Meachitin. He figures out the value that the wheat is worth currently after the prices have gone up. Or Makabla Yain, and he's receiving wine. Shashava Yotu Mashanasan, which is worth more than what he gave. Or Matril, like Kona Yain Menu. Now, he didn't originally buy wine from him. Vario Kamakabel Mois Meachitin. It's as if he's receiving the value of the chitin. So the question is, my question is on Rav. Rav is saying, Ein Oisin Amona B'Domim. Well, why not? According to Rav Oshia's Braisa, it should be just as well to take the Domim as to take the actual thing. It's, again, especially according to the Rashbam, that Domim means that you can take a different kind of commodity. The Braisa clearly says you can take a different kind of commodity. What is Rav saying that not? Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav B'Shem Moshach. So Rav Huna answers in the name of Rav, yes, but we're talking about when he did Meshicha to begin with on the wheat. Now, Tosfos says, we're not necessarily talking about the kind of Meshicha that does a full-fledged Kinyan. Then obviously there's no Chiddush in it. We're talking about the kind of Meshicha which is just, all it accomplishes is that now he has a certain ownership over it, like we said before, to the extent of Mishapara. Not that he did Meshicha to the extent of actually wanting to be Koine. Okay.
Can you do that kind of Kinyan where you're not?
Yeah, because it all depends on their Das. If he doesn't have Das to be Koine, then he's not. Okay, the question is, okay, but in that case, then what's the chiddush? Then it's obvious. Once he did Meshicha, it's already in his possession at that point. Any increase in price of the wheat is his own gain. What's the question? No. We have to say that we're talking about he set aside a particular corner of his granary or whatever for the wheat. Even though there was no Meshicha, the very fact that this guy, the loiva, set aside a spot for this wheat, which is earmarked for him,
when you set a spot for a commodity, it's as if you had acquired it.
Only if he was makna him that land. We're not talking about he was makna him the land, but he set it aside, and now that's what we're saying. That itself is considered important. It's considered enough that it's considered to that extent the Malva owns it. To the extent of Mishapara, like we said before, and therefore that's good enough to say that now we can apply Yeshloi and to say that now later on if the wheat goes up in value, then it's his gain, and therefore later on he's entitled to trade that wheat for a larger amount of wine, etc. That's Rav's explanation. Or Shmuel Amar. Shmuel has a different answer. Homani Rav Yehudi. Shmuel would answer that this that we said before in Rav Oshia's Braisa, Im Yeshlai Mutter, is only according to Rav Yehuda. The Amat Sad Echa Beribis Mutter. Rav Yehuda holds that if you have one-sided ribis, that is mutter. Namely, Rashi says it means like this. We're not talking about it started out as a halva. It didn't start out as a loan. You're talking about a sale, but it could end up becoming ribis if the price goes up. So it depends. It depends. If it ends up going up in price, then there is ribis. But if not, if he just gives him the amount of payers, then there's no ribis. So that Shmuel is saying that according to Rabbi Yehuda, sad echad beribis mutter. Yeah. Tosfos explains that even Rabbi Huda would say that this only applies when it's something that voluntarily he has control over whether there's going to be ribbis or not, because he has control how much payrus he's giving him or whatever. As opposed to, for example, the case of Saba Saba that we talked about before, where it doesn't depend on you, it doesn't depend on the malva or the loiva, it depends on market fluctuations, then even Rabbi Huda would agree that's awesome.
Wait a second, say that again.
Saw where I gave you a saw of wheat, and I expect back a saw, and meanwhile the price has gone up, that even Rabbi Huda would agree that's usur, because that didn't depend on what I did or on what you did. It depends on how the market is, whether the market value has gone up or down. Sada Echa Beribis that we're saying over here, Rabbi Huda would say, is mutter, is where the malve or the loiva has the ability to prevent it from ever coming to a situation of ribis.
Like,
namely, he can, that's what we're saying over here, that he gave him a certain amount of money. He's able to later on return him he's able later on to give him the same amount of produce, or he's able to give him the money. Yeah.
Okay.
So sometimes there can be ribis, sometimes not.
That's one side.
That's the thing. Rashi just says it's a sophic. Tosfos explains it's not just a sophic. It has to be a sophic which one or the other of them is able to prevent that sophic able to prevent one side or the other from ever taking place.
So according to Rashi, both ways Tosfos would be good according to Rabbi Yehuda.
I guess. I mean, Rashi doesn't spell it out, but Rashi would have to agree that Rabbi Yehuda holds that Sabasa is still up. Okay, I guess let's do a little continue tomorrow about the Shem. We're holding the time, yeah.